great talk. The Accent Radio Network, usually hosted by Jerry Hughes, but he is graciously allowing me to come in and spend an hour with you each week here on the Accent Radio Network. It's Wednesday afternoon, first hour of the show. Jerry will be joining you in hours 2 and 3. And today we're going to discuss, well, in fact, we're going to have some big news about a downsized D.C. foundation project. I'll be announcing it here first. Give you a little hint, it has to do with that lawsuit legal brief that we talked about against Obamacare last week. Got some good news to announce there. And we're going to, in fact, we're going to talk a little bit about Obamacare and some ballot initiatives, a ballot initiative in Ohio, the case in Virginia. I want to talk about our odds of beating back Obamacare in the second half of this hour. But first, I want to go to some guests. We have some special guests with us here today. One of them, a radio host himself, his name is Ian Freeman. He joins us from Keene, New Hampshire. And Pete Ayer, who also joins us from Keene, New Hampshire, founder of Liberty on Tour. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Jim.
Thanks for having us, Jim.
Wonderful. And if we can get them up a little bit in my ear, I can barely hear them. Guys, I want to give you guys a chance to kind of talk about what it is that you've done or how you kind of came to be noticed within a movement we call voluntarism. It's a topic we're going to be discussing for most of this half hour. But each of you have an area or a website that you want to plug, I'm sure, and I want to get everybody kind of familiar with you to start. Pete, you're involved in a project called Liberty on Tour. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, Liberty on Tour, essentially we try to take the ideas of self-government and voluntarism. On the road, we try to embed ourselves with activists across the country and learn what they're doing, share some things we've learned from other people, and put a spotlight on it. Essentially, the mission of Liberty on Tour is to advance the voluntary society. So just try to get out there and share ideas. And I do that with my colleague, Adamo Freeman. We travel around in an RV and, just try to get people to think.
It's a rather unusual RV, is it not? I mean, it's got something a little bit distinctive about it.
Yeah, we call it the RV is called MARV, the Mobile Authority Resistance Vehicle. It's painted black and gold, and have a bunch of graphics on the outside. We call it a rolling billboard for liberty. On the inside, we have thousands of signatures on the ceiling. It's our guest book, a lot of the good folks we've been fortunate to meet. And LibertyStickers.com gave us a bunch of bumper stickers on the inside. So essentially, it's a place where we live, work, travel, cook our meals, and been fortunate to have a lot of the country as our backyard as we've made these travels. And, one of the takeaways I've had from doing this previous to Liberty on Tour is Motorhome Diaries, which we did with Jason Talley as well. It's just the sheer number of good people that we've been able to meet, and it just really reinforces my belief in the views that I'm advocating, that most people are generally good, most people know how to act, and it's just removing this violent institution, the state, and all the perverse incentives it creates that could help us get to a more peaceful, prosperous society.
Wonderful. And Ian, you host a show, I believe, right?
That's right, on over 100 radio stations called Free Talk Live, and you've been a guest there a number of times over the last decade.
And you say over a number of stations, you guys are on now 7 days a week, right?
That's correct. 7 nights a week. We're live Eastern time from 7 to 10, and people can listen there over at freetalklive.com. And I'm also involved in freekeen.com, which is one of the big sponsors of Liberty on Tour, because I think what Pete and Demo are doing is some really important activism. I mean, they're going out and they're connecting with people. And more importantly, they're going out and they're telling stories about what they've experienced in New Hampshire. We just literally, moments before we went on the air with you, came back from a court hearing for a friend of ours who's been arrested for the evil crime of selling marijuana in Keene here. And there were approximately, would you say, 30 to 40 people in that courtroom?
Yeah, it was great.
30 to 40 people supporting our friend Bo. And if you've never been in a court situation with that many people, it's really interesting how things can change. Like, for instance, what was there, 3 people maybe that stood for the judge when he walked in? The man in the robe comes in, and almost no one in the entire court stood up for him. So that was good, but unfortunately they are charging him with a felony, so it's a pretty serious situation.
Yeah, it sounds very serious. And one of the things I wanted to talk about here with you guys today, there's a couple of different projects you guys are involved in that I wanted to talk about, not so much as part of the introduction, but I hope people actually will tune in to Free Talk Live, because every night you're giving out good information. You're talking about stuff that's going on in Keene. You're talking about stuff that's going on around the country. And you give callers control of the show, right, Ian?
Yeah, anyone can bring up whatever they think's important.
And then there's podcasts also. If you missed the show, I know a lot of your fans listen to the show on podcasts. But this Free Keene project now, seems like a practical application of voluntarism. And I brought you guys on to kind of define what voluntarism, discuss kind of maybe a little bit about what it is, and then I want to get into a couple of these practical applications like Free Keen, because as you know, Ian, I was recently in New Hampshire. I came and got into your studios, mm-hmm. Saw what was going on there, and I came away excited. I mean, hate to quote Chris Matthews, but I had a tickle go down my leg. it was an interesting time. I saw some very interesting things in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the philosophy, though, that motivates you guys. That you guys have called this voluntarism. What is voluntarism, Pete?
It's essentially the advocacy of anything that's consensual. You know, you could say you're for anything that's peaceful. We're for individual rights and personal responsibility. So, you know, people should be free to act so long as they're not aggressing upon the person or property of another. And today, you know, the major rights violator that we tirade against is the state or state actors, which at the end of the day is just a bad idea. So we're trying to replace that arbitrary authority that some people grant to someone based on their place of occupation or if they have a badge on their chest with applying the same standards they would to you or I. So if something's wrong for me or you to do, it's wrong for somebody with a badge to do. And at the end of the day, you know, everybody employed with the state is an institution based on violence. They steal money from everybody within a certain arbitrary political boundary. And, you know, there's no way, even if they provide something that would people would actually demand, there's no way that they can provide it as efficiently as could the market because they lack market signals. They claim a monopoly on force.
Ian, you mentioned moments ago that you were at this hearing for Beau and that the people didn't stand up for the judge. You know, for someone that may be hearing about some of these ideas for the very first time, that might seem, I don't know, kind of a bit over the edge, a bit, you know, disrespectful or whatever. What is the importance of that particular gesture? And how do you explain to somebody who's kind of new to these ideas why you didn't take a stand?
It's a small act of non-cooperation. Maybe you could even call it civil disobedience. But I think it's important for people who feel strongly about freedom to become what the change they wish to see. If they want the idea of the state, which is, as Pete was talking about, is a really bad old idea. I mean, the state is an old concept, and it's a bad one. I mean, it's people using coercive force over other peaceful human beings. And just like the idea of slavery has been eliminated, at least from people's minds, I don't think it's been eliminated from reality, but people are opposed to the ideas of slavery. I think people need to become opposed to the idea of the state. And if we can show through our actions that we're opposed to it, then maybe other people will be inspired to join in as well. And so I think it's important for people to engage in non-cooperation as much as they can humanly do. Obviously, there's a limit for everybody. Some people, they've got families and important careers, and they can only risk so much. But when you're in a courtroom with dozens of people, and all of them stay seated for the man in the robe as he walks in, then that has a strengthening effect. It encourages people to, I guess, you know, stay in solidarity with one another, and because you know that they're not going to do anything to you. In fact, nobody even said word one to us for staying seated. But the first time that happens, if there's only a handful of folks doing it, there's a good chance some bailiffs are going to yell at you and some people are going to get hot-headed. And if somebody wants to be upset about it, that just kind of shows that they're still in the mindset that the state deserves respect. And it doesn't, because it's a violent idea, and it's people that are using violence on others. So as soon as that judge stops hurting peaceful people, if that man in that robe were to be one, like the one guy in America who would just kick out every single nonviolent case out of his courtroom, if some cop brought him a drug case and he said, get this out of here, the case dismissed, or, you know, traffic cases where nobody's being harmed, if that judge were to be the one judge who actually didn't hear cases without a victim and only heard cases, like a rape or murder or something like that, I'd stand for that judge, because then I would have respect for that person and what he was doing. But I don't have respect for people that aggress against others.
You know, this is an interesting way that you're putting this, because there's a group of people who have gotten some television time recently. They call themselves the Occupy Movement, and they've been upset about corporations for their lack of accountability. And what I hear you describing here is that you consider this judge to have not to be able to hide behind the government or not be able to hide behind his position, but rather that he, as an individual actor, has to take responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me throw this out to either one of you that wants to grab this, though. I'm curious, have you found that that approach has actually drawn you recruits, or do you find that it has repelled people? How is it playing out when you engage in these various acts?
I would definitely say that the size and scope and activity of this movement, the voluntarist movement that strikes the root, has grown. The internet has allowed us to share ideas. Censors in the past thrive by controlling data, access to information, clamping down on dissent. But today we're able to share ideas. We're able to support each other. These court cases, again, for instance, they may levy some charges on somebody that are frivolous, for which there is no victim, but and they may think that it will chill future activism. But instead, it has an exact inverse reaction. It causes lots of activists from different areas to get together and join in supporting that individual, and only become stronger and strengthened. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a voluntarist thinker and author named Carl Wattner. He says, if one takes care of the means, the ends will take care of themselves. And that essentially speaks to the fact that if you do want to live in a peaceful, prosperous society where no one thinks they have the right to aggress upon somebody else, then you stop granting such people authority today. You implement it today, and we'll get there sooner.
So the simple idea is that people are only governed by their own consent, and when they withdraw that consent, they can't really be controlled or coerced anymore.
Well, you can always
really
be put. You can always be put in a cage, but once your mind is free, then there's not much more they can do to you. The real you. They
right.
can put your body in the cage, but that only does so much. And it certainly, didn't correct me when I was sitting in a cage for 58
days.
Well,
I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about Carl Wattner when we come back for the break. We need to take a break right now. You are listening to the Accent Radio Network.
Straight up harassment.
You're listening to Straight Talk on the Accent Radio Network. Jerry Hughes, Vlad Me, Jim Babka, president of the Downsize DC Foundation and DownsizeDC.org Incorporated. You can find us at the web, DownsizeDC.org. To sit in for him today, and I'm being joined by Ian Freeman and Pete Eyre. Pete, you brought up a guy who's kind of a central philosopher in the modern voluntarist movement. His name is Carl Wattner. Tell us just a bit about Carl and his philosophy.
Well, Carl Wattner runs a website called thevoluntarist.com, and he has been one of the, for me at least, one of the big inspirations and really unlearning, I guess, some of the pro-state rhetoric that had been instilled in me in public education and the mainstream media. Essentially, the idea that, individuals should be free to act as long as they're not aggressing upon somebody else. And it's a simple concept, and most people would agree with it in theory, but how many actually live it? How many still pay taxes? How many still grant leeway to, if they saw someone with a badge beating somebody up versus someone that didn't have a badge beating somebody up, would somebody act different in that situation? But Carl Wander's been putting out a newsletter for the past three decades. He lives in South Carolina. He has on his website a section about essentially journeys to voluntarism where he breaks down his own background. And he's just a real clear, concise, powerful advocate of complete liberty. So he's somebody that I definitely look to for inspiration.
Now, several months ago, I started investigating this philosophy and looking at it. I've, been a libertarian for the last 15 years. Harry Brown brought me into the libertarian movement.
Me too.
I ended up working on his campaign. Yeah, Ian and I have kind of a similar journey in that respect.
That's actually how we met, was through Harry Brown's campaign.
Exactly. Nice. And so, I'm a bit behind where you are at this moment, Ian, in terms of what I'm willing to do and so forth. But, there was one area of his philosophy that really seemed like a sticking point to me. And he and Wendy McElroy said it was so central, it was almost like this was part of the gospel from on high. If you're a voluntarist, you don't do the following. You don't participate in any way in elections. I'm curious, number one, what your feelings are about Ron Paul or even Gary Johnson for each one of you. And second, is not being able to vote, provided you're voting for a candidate that is anti-state, is it not a method of self-defense for the individual to be able to say, hey, look, I want to withdraw consent from the state. I want somebody in that position who's actually going to reduce the power of it.
I vote. So I mean, I think you can be a voluntarist and vote. I understand the position of those who would take, you know, this kind of moral objection that, you know, with the concept that voting is violence or somehow an endorsement of the system. But I think that reads in motivations into people that aren't there. So for me, like you said, voting is a defensive mechanism. It accepts the idea that people aren't ready to, you know, move just tomorrow morning. Everyone's not going to wake up and reject the idea of the state. So in the meantime, elections are going to happen. And I don't really live under the delusion that voting is going to do much of anything real to change the system. But I think that ultimately, maybe on a more local level, certainly we've seen here in New Hampshire with a dozen free staters being elected in the last election, and I'm sure more will be running in 2012. Clearly, if you're dealing with a smaller level election, you really can have some effect on things like that, especially if you're here in New Hampshire where the districts are relatively small and it's easy to, for the average person to run for a political office. I find politics to be detestable. I find most politicians to be detestable. I think Ron Paul and Gary Johnson are two really unique cases. And I've already donated a few hundred dollars to the Ron Paul campaign, not because I think he's going to win or that I care if he wins, but I think that Ron Paul brings the message of freedom, what is a relatively pure message, to a wide audience. And I know that there are people here in New Hampshire today who are only here because they found this movement, the Free State Project, through Ron Paul and through his campaign. And so I see voting and the political system and running political elections as, you know, as a method to get the word out. Like you said, we both found out about these ideas through Harry Brown's presidential campaign. And maybe it could have been argued that we would have found them anyway through some other means, but it is what it is, and that can't be ignored as far as I'm concerned. But Pete might have a different opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing but respect for Ian, but I guess I would disagree with the political aspect. I think, you know, you mentioned Wendy McElroy before. She has an essay on this that essentially says, you know, if you're running for office, supporting someone running for office, yet still claim to stand for liberty, you know, like saying that two trains are running down the same track, and one is somebody who doesn't vote based on principle, and the other person is somebody who's, you know, liberty-oriented, who may just think they get off the train a little bit before. But, you know, Wendy McElroy's point is that the trains are actually running in opposite directions because the former, you know, doesn't grant anybody extra authority, while the latter still, I think, legitimizes the system. So at some point, and I would say that if we who self-describe as voluntarists or advocates of complete liberty are still active in the political system, how can we fault other people for not yet rejecting it or not yet, you know, being farther along the path in their journey to liberty? You know, we have to, I think, plant a flag and advocate for the ideal, and that'll get us there sooner.
I think that you can advocate for the ideal while operating within the political system as just simply a message candidacy. But does that, Pete, what you're saying about your opinions on voting, does that preclude Jim Babka, who is a voter, and myself, who occasionally will vote, from being voluntarist?
I mean, I can't.
Is there a purity test?
Teach their own. I'm not going to say what someone can be defined as or not. You know,
but would you look down your nose, like if Jim Babka or myself said, I'm a voluntarist, would you look down your nose at them and say, well, no, you're not?
Well, I try not to look down at anybody unless I know that they're willingly using force against somebody.
Which we're not.
I would say that I guess we have a point of disagreement. I wouldn't belittle it or, you know, anything like that. But teach their own. I mean, as for like Ron Paul and Gary Johnson, I mean, truth be told, is in his previous campaign, I voted for Ron Paul in the primary, and you know, I guess, you know, Gary Johnson, I respect him as an athlete and he seems to have his stuff together. But again, I don't think at the end of the day, politics is going to be the solution. So essentially, it's an opportunity cost. Every hour you spend in politics, you're not spending striking the root.
All right. That music says we're almost we got to go to the break. But can you guys stick around for one more segment?
Sure.
Sure.
All right. We're going to do one more segment because I want to talk about a couple practical projects both these men are involved in New Hampshire, and even across the country. You're listening to the Accent Radio Network. And we're back, listening to Straight Talk on the Accent Radio Network. I'm Jim Babka, filling in this hour for Jerry Hughes, who will be back in just a little over a half hour to do hours 2 and 3 of today's episode of Straight Talk. I'm being joined by Ian Freeman and Pete Ayer. Guys, we got about 10 minutes, and I want to rush through a lot of things as fast as we possibly can. First, Ian mentioned in the previous, teased us a little bit in the first, the previous segment, about having spent some time in a cell and having, but still having his mind free. And this was one of those incidents where you were standing up to what you believe police abuse was. Real quickly, tell us what happened in your story.
A young lady, a friend of mine, was enjoying an alcoholic beverage in the park one afternoon here in Keene, New Hampshire, and the police began harassing her. A call went over the two-way radios to alert folks that something was going on. I came down. I was down the street at a social event we were having. Hopped on my bike, came down there, and there were about 20 people that had come down at that point. Basically, there was a lengthy argument that ensued with the police where the crowd wanted them to go away and leave people alone, and they didn't want to stop leaving her alone, so she didn't give them her information. They tried to, you know, they tried to take her out of there in handcuffs. And I had decided before that, I'd been inspired by another activist who had done something similar in the past, to stand in front of the police car the next time I saw them aggressing against a peaceful person. So this was my opportunity to do that. I did that. Three others joined me, and we all were arrested. I ended up over a year later going to trial for that, which was an insanely the judge was a madman and wouldn't even allow a guy with a Ron Paul shirt on in the trial. He forced him to turn his shirt inside out. People, I mean, it was just crazy the amount of control he was exerting. And so I was found guilty of so-called obstructing government administration, sentenced to 360 days with 270 suspended, 90 actually in jail, and then of that I spent 58 due to the two-thirds rule.
All very complicated how they arrive at these numbers, but what was, you know, Martin Luther King sat and wrote a letter from a Montgomery jail. What was your experience? What spiritual thing did you take out of this?
Well, it was definitely, we kind of joke, some of us then call the Keene jail the Keene spiritual retreat, because if you go into a situation like that with the right mindset, that's what it can be for you. I mean, if you want to go into it with a mindset of fear and trepidation, then it probably might be a scary experience for you. But if you go in with a mindset of positivity and, you know, looking at it as an opportunity to reach new people that you otherwise wouldn't have with the ideas of liberty, and I include both the inmates and the staff of the jail when I say reach new people, then maybe that's the experience you'll have. And that's the experience that I had. So I did get to, you know, kind of research spirituality. I read the Quran while I was in there and read different books on world religions. And also I had a bunch of people on the outside sending me books. So I got plenty of Liberty stuff to read, some graphic novels from Big Head Press and other neat stuff. So I was really occupied the whole time that I was in there. And I really did get to talk to people about freedom. And those conversations happened naturally. I never pushed it on anybody. They wanted to ask me about who I was and why I was there, and of course they were outraged as you know that I would be in a jail for so many days. But of course the jail's full of peaceful people. I mean, there's most of the people in there haven't actually harmed anybody else.
That's fascinating. You know, Pete, you know, Ian actually blocked a cop car, but you are involved, if I'm not mistaken, in Cop Block. Tell us a little bit about Cop Block.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a organization, copblock.org. We essentially we believe that badges don't grant extra rights, and at the end of the day, you know, people in D.C. or the capital, whatever state you happen to be in, they can write whatever they want on a piece of paper. It doesn't make it right. Yet the people, you know, instead of clamoring for them to change the legislation, it's the people at the end of the day who are most likely to violate your rights wear badges, the people that believe it's their job just to enforce that. So, you know, they're really the police are the teeth of the state. So we try to we seek transparency with the video cameras, the new gun. We get out there, we film, we do call floods in support of people who are kidnapped and caged. We try to make it personal, essentially. Instead of saying, you know, such and such police department kidnapped and caged this activist, we say Joe Smith of this organization did this. Here's his email, here's his phone number, here's, you know, we've done candlelight vigils in Keene here in the past. I guess Free Keene spearheaded those, but we've done other things. So essentially it's an issue that, you know, most people listening to this program, you know, if a police officer cruiser is behind them in traffic, they get a little bit nervous. And why is that? If they actually serve and protect you as they purport to do, you would probably welcome them being around. But instead, today there's an oversupply of policing because there's no market signals. So, you know, the police may have started out targeting actions that actually had victims, rape, murder, theft. But since there's no check on them, you know, they're you know, it's public choice theory, essentially. It's they hire more officers. They say they have more things to enforce. So at the end of the day, they only grow and grow and grow at the direct inverse of your rights. So we get out there and we try to film them, hold them accountable. And it's been a very, very popular site. The trajectory
is... It's not just, it's not just happening in New Hampshire. This is the thing that's interesting to me. A lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about, in fact, we're going to talk about Free Keen next, is going on in New Hampshire. You guys got kind of an incubator or a lab going on there, but CopBlock is spreading all across the country.
Yeah, and there's actually some guys on Facebook at least just started a UK CopBlock group, so it's spreading. I mean, almost no one you'll talk to on the street doesn't think that police have a right to privacy when they're on the clock. So, you know, it's an issue that has a lot of support right out of the gate, and it's an issue with the growing police state that we're seeing that is very timely. So, you know, we encourage everybody, download a free application on your phone so you can live stream. That can't be deleted. We've had cops delete footage in the past, you know, and support each other in court, support each other, you know, learn from each other. It's a decentralized organization, so if someone listening wants to get involved, you know, start, you know, that's all I'll say. The sooner we do it, for me, it's if we don't stand up for our rights today, it's going to be more difficult to do so tomorrow or for our kids to do so.
Absolutely. And people can go to copblock.org and link to some of the local groups there, right, Pete? I mean, there's links there.
Yep.
So you can get involved that way. And it's good to be around, even if it's just a small nucleus of people, it helps to have somebody back you up. And if these are people who are willing to do something rather than what my experience was in the Libertarian Party a decade ago, was just sit around and complain. If these people are willing to get out and, you know, hold up a sign in front of a DUI checkpoint or something like that, bring out video cameras and or just, you know, listen to the police scanner and go to police calls and just kind of keep an eye on things. I mean, these are things that people can do. But as was mentioned, having more people helps. And that's why the Free State Project is such a powerful idea. And of course, Free Keen is sort of an offshoot of that. Pete and I moved here for the Free State Project, which is a movement of thousands of like-minded, liberty-oriented people all converging into the same place. And I think we've seen thus far, from whether you look at political success or civil disobedience or the media that's being created here, there's so much that's happening, and we're just on the beginning cusp of it, really. I mean, this is a lifetime project. We've only had several hundred movers thus far, and there are over 11,000 who are pledged to move. So, I mean, the ideas of what could come next, it's pretty mind-boggling when you get the people on your side, and when you do it deliberately, it makes a difference.
You know, you must have actually done this radio hosting thing before, because you actually seemed to know where I was going, and you started to take it there, Ian. Let's close up here with a discussion about Free Keen, and let me just share my experience. I came up there, went to your studios, which I believe you guys are sitting in right now.
Yes.
And then right next door to there, there's a house that you own, Ian, that you have basically donated or set up for Free Keen, and this house is a place where people where activists can come and they can hang out and they can interact with each other and they can plan and strategize and catch a meal. If somebody's coming in from out of town to kind of check out what you're doing, you know, it kind of gives them a place maybe that they can put a roof over their head for a night or two. I mean, there's some cool things going on there. But I was really struck. We had a conversation, you and I. You probably don't even remember this. I actually am a concealed carry holder. I have a permit here in Ohio. You need a permit to carry a gun around. And I consider this an important tool in my self-defense. And you said, I don't need that. I have weapons of self-defense, too. There were several of you, you included, that were carrying around Marine band radios and video cameras. Tell me about that concept of self-defense.
Well, as Pete mentioned before, if you've got a video camera, that is the best way to keep the police accountable. I mean, even if it doesn't send out to the internet, which is a good way to have it, just having something that is video will likely change the behavior of a rogue officer. Sometimes for the worst, because they might grab it and smash it.
That's an important point, because this is actually one observer has said that this is the most important civil liberties battle of the next decade or two. There are states that actually have criminalized filming an officer doing something in public. Using private wiretapping law.
Yeah, Illinois is one of the worst ones on that particular front. So, but having as many tools as you can to link yourself into the activist world is important. And so that's where the idea for two-way radios came in. They're still, you know, not everybody has them. Pete and I do, and some other folks in the area do. But it's an easy way to keep an instant contact with people in an immediate vicinity. So if you've got a group of activists on the ground doing something, it's important to have immediate two-way discussions rather than having to fumble for a phone number and only be able to call one person at a time. You can put a call out on a two-way radio system and get instant response. So there have been some situations where having these two ways has really allowed people to respond quickly. It's like a pumpkin festival once where some people were getting arrested, and I would never have known about it had a call not come out on the two-way system. And because I found out about it, I literally went, you know, 100 feet in the other direction, was able to respond instantly, whereas otherwise I would have been completely clueless. So it's a great communications tool, and they're very affordable. You can get entry-level radios for as little as $50, and you can have more kind of base station radios. So, Pete, you've got one installed in Marv, so as you guys drive around, you've got constant communications.
Yeah, and that was, thanks to Ian. Ian donated that to Marv to help, you know, it's... The community here in the Shire in New Hampshire is amazing. I mean, there's good groups of people, pockets everywhere, but the sheer number of people and activities going on up here is incredible. And, you know, we all have our specializations. We're all able to help each other and reinforce each other. So it's just, I mean, I came from the DC think tank world, and that was, you know, kind of armchair philosophy, and this is actually implementing it. So it's amazing to be a part of.
We're way over time here. We're supposed to have taken a break a couple of minutes ago. But, Ian, I want to give you an opportunity to close this up by telling us, you know, I probably haven't asked exactly the right question. How would you present the idea of FreeKing? What are you guys doing? How can people get involved? How can they even bring some form of FreeKing to their town? Give us a wrap-up or kind of conclusion. What's the most important thing about FreeKing?
Well, FreeKing is a multi-user blog with the original intention of allowing liberty-oriented personalities in Keene to express themselves. So whether that means, you know, writing an essay about something or posting a video that they've made or whatever, I wanted to have as much variety from different people of a generally liberty-oriented mindset on there. So there's like one guy that's more of like a leftist liberal, leftist kind of libertarian guy. And so there's different people on there with somewhat differing opinions. But the idea was to also be an advertisement for the idea of moving to Keene. We already know people are interested in moving to New Hampshire because of the Free State Project, but I think the fact that Free Keene has existed for the last 4 or 5 years is essentially it's an advertisement for this area. It's a beautiful area, and it's very small, so you can have a fairly large effect. You can be a big fish in a small pond, so to speak, here. Manchester is obviously a real big draw because it's the big city, and I think that Keene, despite its small size, has kind of become a competitor to Manchester. It's when people talk about the places to which they're looking at moving in New Hampshire, usually the two they mention are Manchester and Keene. And I like that because I think it's important to concentrate people in one area. And even though we're concentrating people in New Hampshire, I think that having people concentrated in a couple or two or three different places in New Hampshire could be useful. And I chose Keene originally due to the what I consider very inspirational civil disobedience that happened here very in the early days of the Free State Project. And that civil disobedience has continued. And it has spread. We've seen the civil disobedience kind of that was created in Keene to some extent in the Liberty Movement, because it really hadn't happened before that. It's gone on down in Austin, Texas. It's gone on in Orlando in a big way, even in D.C. with the D.C. dance parties that happened recently. All of that was inspired by some of the activism from Keene. And so if we can inspire people to do more freedom wherever they are, that's great. If we can inspire people to move to New Hampshire, that's great. And if they choose the Keene area, even better.
Well, it's sad that we've run out of time. In fact, I had a whole line of questioning. I wanted to talk about how you uphold responsibility in a civilized society, and we would have had an interesting discussion there. There's just so many different ways we could have gone here today, but I think we've given everybody maybe enough to whet their appetite and get them going. In fact, you've already won one fan. Regina is sitting there operating the board. She says, these guys are awesome, true freedom fighters. So, guys, thank you for the work that you're doing. And thank you for coming on the show today.
It's always great being with you, Jim. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for advancing the freedom movement as well, Jim.
Thank you. Pete Ayer and Ian Freeman, their websites Liberty on Tour and Free Talk Live, respectively. I hope you'll check them out, maybe even listen to Free Talk Live tonight.